A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank. How do you make decisions when resources are limited? It's never easy, right? But businesses and organizations and, of course, our very own personal budgets all need to know how to walk that tightrope as costs go up and down and innovations keep coming at us. Like, there's always so many new systems. So today we're going to dive into the how of cutting costs. And get this, we are also going to get a very first look into the newly remodeled and refurbished Gobbler in Johnson Creek. We're going to talk about changing your cell phone plan and what you have to do if you decide to change carriers. And then, you know, we're going to look into the lens of an Italian movie that was made in 1948, and we'll tell you why it still matters today. Our good friend Ted Lukash from the Era Group will join us in studio. Ted is a font of knowledge on many different levels. This is The Upswing. I'm happy you're here. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Ted Lukash. Ted is a managing partner at the Era Group. You know, it's an interesting time, Ted, I think, right now in our economic landscape. Costs and savings throughout any business, people seem to attach more meaning to them right now, as do culture and creativity. Culture and creativity seem to matter a whole lot more in today's economy. That's why I wanted to have you back. You're a regular Upswing guest, and I appreciate your time. But you have some really good creative lens into not only the business world, but the music world, the venue world, the arts and culture world. We worked together, several years ago at iMilwaukee.com through your music reviews. So we're going to cover a whole lot today, but I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for all you do for the community.
Of course. So, Ted, a Milwaukee CEO asks you, like, what do you do day-to-day in your work? How do you explain it?
Tried a couple of different approaches. the best thing I can say is we really help organizations find money they're already spending, and we make sure they're getting the full value without disrupting what the client's really doing well.
And do you feel like the cost savings work that you do is even more relevant in the economic times that we're in right now?
Yeah, especially in uncertain times, because most organizations have already made the obvious cuts. Today, the challenge is whether revenue exists. It's protecting those margins. Labor, insurance, technology, utilities, and vendor costs are on the rise. And leaders simply don't have the time, and I'm trying to say this in the most polite way, or expertise to revisit those decisions they made, you know, a few years back.
Yeah. So your path, Ted, goes from owning, I don't know if it's the right word, but you own mom and pop phone stores back in the day, right?
Yeah.
All across the era and telecom, and you had corporate roles, and now you're doing cost optimization at Era Group. Your life is paralleled as a music writer. What's kind of that through line that connects your career? I always like to talk recruitment and retention on the upswing, and it's always interesting to look through the lens of people whose careers changed.
Yeah, so it's like an evolving mix of curiosity, creativity, and mostly relationship building. When I was selling phones or managing teams or even writing about music, it was about the organizations I was working with, and I improved their performance with critical analysis. It's always been fascinating why people make decisions and whether they're getting the outcomes they expect.
Yeah.
At the core, I spent my career asking questions. I should have been a detective or police officer. I don't know.
But that's the heart of sales, all right? Yeah. Asking the good questions to get the sale.
So listening carefully, and then, you know, it's helping people make better informed decisions. So it's something you can do, you know, across planes.
Yeah. So what did owning the telecom mobile stores teach you about margins and customer behavior and even risk? Like, today, you're talking maybe on a higher level with CEOs. Mm-hmm. How did you learn about risk at the retail level?
Well, every dollar is in play when you're at that scale we were at. And it was really about building a network and creating good relationships, not just with your vendors, but also with your team and in inside your community. I was an early networker. My dad always likes to say he was the first person to have a business after five at a chamber event. And the West Dallas Chamber claims that as theirs. So I was at one of those early on. And so I think building in the community was really key for me. So, you know, it's been one of those things. And it's also that the customers don't always buy on price, even in West Dallas.
Yeah.
Shockingly. They buy on trust, convenience, and really confidence in their partners.
Yeah. We're talking with Ted Lukash, managing partner at the Era Group. Ted, how did that work then kind of shape how you read a room, how you ask questions, and how you tell a story through your music reviews?
A lot of that is really just waiting for the other person, whether it be a business owner or a musician, to give you the story. So it's all about getting the story, and that's the cool part about what I'm doing now is you're learning about the company's landscape, and it's really a growth and development. Every day is new. You get new things you're figuring out, whether it's ocean freight or pest control or something crazy that you would have never thought about unless you were in that situation. But music is the same way, hearing about artists, talking about their families more. In the past, you never got that.
Yeah. And as I mentioned at the opening of the show, and we'll talk about it later, you were at the Gobbler in Johnson Creek for the very first show. So we're going to get a firsthand review and get some insights as to the renovations they made there. And I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on kind of how that venue will evolve and how it will fit into the mix of the venues in the area. But I want to wrap up this segment with kind of a question tied to like friction and hidden costs. And if you look at I saw a recent Wisconsin Public Policy Forum that was focused on how development approval and permitting timelines can affect whether projects in the area actually move forward. From your perspective, Ted, where does money get kind of, I don't know what's the right term, like silently burned during expansion and development projects? Because we hear so much about development and expansion, but the reality is there's a P&L there and there's money being spent early on.
Yeah, so I was excited to hear, and I know you've heard Mayor Johnson talk about this, how Milwaukee permitting is a top priority and how they've really got their arms around it and they're shortening the cycle times. So that's a very interesting and positive development. I think that anybody who's ever remodeled a kitchen or a bathroom would know that a change order is really the silent killer.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's exclusive to homeowners. So business owners, a lot of times there's a change in leadership or whatnot, and then the vision changes on what they want. I can think of a client that they had a particular type of lead. I mean, you look at Harley, now the culture is to come back to office over there, and you have a whole different idea and scope for what you want on the headquarters.
Yeah. We're talking with Ted Lukash at the Era Group. Ted, when we come back, I want to look into the lens of Milwaukee and its business climate. I'm really interested to see what local business type is under the most pressure right now. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Ted Lukash from the Era Group. Ted, we're talking people and organizations, how we make decisions when resources are limited. I saw a story last week about Tremont Manufacturing expanding on the northwest side of Milwaukee. They've leased additional space, added some more jobs, really driven on their side by more demand from data centers. When you look at, you see stories of like mid-sized manufacturers in the area, is there something about kind of this throughput in terms of opportunity for smaller manufacturers when it comes to the macro data center opportunity?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at a company like Modine that's out of Racine, they're a hub. The Rockwell, Kohler, all those companies are going to create opportunities for pieces to fit into their puzzle. So it's kind of like if you bring in an auto plant, you're going to have, a lot of peripheral business involved with that. So it's a really a neat time to be flexible and creative.
Can you, though, maybe as a smaller manufacturer, do you look at that opportunity and expand too aggressively?
Yeah, you can shoot over your skis, you know, pretty easy. You know, you're spending money on equipment that, you know, isn't going to be used. I've heard stories of that, and then you end up selling it off for pennies on the dollar for a whole different use. So you just got to be careful, make sure that you have the orders in tow before they move forward.
Yeah, that's good advice for sure. So when you look at local business types and pressure in the economic landscape, where's that most pressure right now? Is it with the manufacturers? Are you seeing it in the nonprofit space with hospitality groups? Or is it just like the mid-size businesses in the area?
Well, I'm kind of biased. I think nonprofit. I know you're very involved with nonprofit as well. So I think nonprofit is a particularly tricky space right now.
From the funder standpoint or from the organization standpoint, all of the above?
All the above. I mean, you have everything from tax law changing. So donors are giving at different levels. Donors aren't. They're concerned about what's valid, what's not.
Show me the ROI right away.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the first their tax situations, and then you've got the organizationally. There's a lot more need for nonprofit services, and you have cost rising, of course, with staff and those type of things. And then you've got headwinds you haven't experienced before, things like government pressure. There's some political bends in some of these that weren't, you know, 10 or 15 years ago weren't even talked about.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge.
Yeah, it's a challenge, but I also see opportunity too, because if you look at big development projects, I always say that none of these projects happen without a nonprofit partner, a for-profit partner, and a government partner. And that's the reality on the nonprofit side, that you gotta, as much as you can, you gotta stay in the game and you gotta find the opportunity.
Yes, very much.
Speaking of opportunity, well, maybe let's go the other way first. What do we tend to underestimate about Milwaukee as a business city?
I think that's like the easiest question. You just gave me a layup.
Right, that's right.
Anybody who's from here that knows, you know, you're 1 or 2 degrees away from anybody. So it's Kevin Bacon can be jealous. I mean,
Indeed, really. You go the 7 degrees of separation is what, 1.2 in the metro area.
Yeah. So if you go to a away game for the Packers or Bucks or Brewers, and people will just come up to you if you're flying colors. I mean, it's really, but it's also that way up chain. So if you're even paying attention a little bit, if you look at any Milwaukee Business Journal event or Biz Times event, you can go see a local leader of strength or magnitude for lunch.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have those opportunities in other markets. So it's really the connectivity and then the ability for partnership. You know, people really want you to succeed. They're proud of it when companies do well here.
Yeah, we cheer each other on, and we do have a collaborator die mentality, especially when we really need to. I mean, do we overestimate that power of connectivity? And I guess, what do we overestimate? Because sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees when you're in the work each and every day.
Yeah, you had Martin Moore on a couple weeks ago, and I was listening. And
we appreciate that. Thank you.
So something that he said kind of stuck with me a little bit, and kind of a little bit in my side, considering I got three kids and adult kids in the arts. What he said was that he thought that it was easier to succeed here in the creative community because there was less competition. To me, that's a flag.
Okay.
That's a concern that we need to develop more creativity venues or outlets, or I don't know how you do that. You have another MIAD. I don't know where you get that from.
Yeah.
But I just think that we're the lowest in the nation per person for art spend, for government support. Maybe we can start there,
It's that whole what big fish in a small sea, right? I mean, that has optimization. It has tangible benefits for sure. And I think that's what Mart was trying to say. But at the same time, if you don't have as many opportunities to go to larger organizations to take that next step, maybe that's what we're lacking from an institutional and opportunity standpoint from a creativity lens.
Yeah, I would say just having a structure, having more arts organizations would be, again, another easy place for government to help us in that lens. It just seems like if we can make this a hub, I mean, I always said years ago, what if UWM had a program combined with Summerfest where they would train people on how to be in the music business? Mm-hmm. Think of what that would do, even if it was only, you know, 5 or 10 people per year. They're now connected to the city.
Yeah. I mean, that collaboration between local institutions of higher learning, I think, is really essential. And next week on the show, we'll have Dr. Kimo Ayun and Sarah Panchieri from Summerfest and talk about the collaborations between those two institutions. And a lot of that goes back to recruitment and retention.
There you go. Step ahead of me.
There you go.
Always.
All right. When we come back, Ted, I want to get your thoughts on live music venues, lessons learned in that business, because music isn't just for our listening pleasure. There are true economic lessons to be learned. We're talking with Ted Lukash from the Era Group. I'm Jeff Sherman. You're listening to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Ted Lukash from the Era Group. Ted, again, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to be here with us. We're going to shift a little bit from numbers to culture. You've covered shows from a reviewer standpoint at venues like Riverside Theater, Summerfest. You've done coverage for Journal Sentinel, OnMilwaukee.com, a bunch of other entities. When you walk into a show, I mean, we're at the high point of the summer concert season right now. What are you actually looking for, kind of beyond the song titles and set list? I'm always interested to, like, look into the creative mind of the music reviewers and, like, how do you showcase that through a review?
Well, first off, you always find us right back by the sound tent. or the soundboard, because that's where you get the best sounds.
Yeah, okay, that's
so
good.
So we're always hanging out back there.
Be in the right spot.
Yes, but from that vantage, you can really view the experience of the venue. And that's something, obviously, as a reviewer, you're not just talking about music. You're talking about the whole experience of the show. And I think anybody who's ever been to one, I mean, you know, I still remember sneaking into Century Hall to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You know, don't tell my dad. But,
you know, no ticket, just like scooch past the security guard.
A little underage. Yeah.
You know, we've all done that. But, I may or may not have done that for Prince back at the old, now the Miller High Life Theater. But,
there you go.
You know, don't tell
nobody
anyone.
Needs to know. But, you know, Summerfest is another one where I think we have such a special environment here for kids growing up that you get a chance to go see a plethora of different bands, different styles at a venue where it's safe and open, and you can create a pretty good first experience down there. But when you're going to a concert hall or a concert venue, I think it's really important to remember what's around.
Yeah. I mean, it's paying attention to that authenticity, the intimacy, like the emotional connection that you have to be intentional as a venue to help create that. It's not just the artist on the stage. Yes, that's a big reason we're going to shows. But the business at the venue has to drive some of that feeling. And that's your job as a reviewer to bring that to paper, if you will, or to print.
Yeah, it's interesting that people have recollections of shows and things like that. I mean, anybody who was at CBGB's back in New York in the day will talk about how, you know, their love of the place. But I was there, and I'm going to tell you, it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. Memory can sometimes grow not as fun.
Nostalgia, it's a little too nostalgic there for me. I mean, it was a hard place. And the sound wasn't good and all that stuff. So it was the entertainment was in the walls there, you know, the baked into the walls.
I'm going to get your first take of the new Gobbler out in Johnson Creek in a minute. But as you look at kind of the state of the state, if you will, of concerts and venues in the greater Milwaukee area, how would you describe that?
I think it's healthy right now. It's an interesting mix because you've got new venues coming in like Landmark, a Gobbler actually reopening. But you also had some smaller ones close, Jazz Estate Loss, you know, just too small, you know. And unfortunately, it was just a numbers game. And you're seeing less live, smaller shows. And I think that we kind of—
Because they're harder to make money on for the venue, or the artists don't want to play the small shows, or a combination
of
everything?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
I mean, I just was kind of dinking around and looking at ticket prices and some of the other markets. And it's shocking because you can go see Bleachers are coming back. They were rehearsing here, but they're coming back into town, so I was interested. And the ticket prices are actually less expensive in Los Angeles at the Greek Theater and are less in some other places than they are in Milwaukee. Mm. And I think that it's become kind of a weird dance where the ticket prices are higher and, you know, and then you maybe have one less drink, you know. So it's kind of it's put a lot of the venues in a tough spot because they have to guarantee a certain amount to get the band here.
Well, you're probably seeing that, and as fans were seeing it, like from a cost standpoint, you have talent, you have staffing, you have insurance, you have production. How does that change the way that venues are looking at ticket prices and even their calendars? And like, there's a certain amount of risk, whether you're a Summerfest or you're the former Jazz Estate, that you have to take on to bring the right shows in, bring the fan base.
Yeah. I hate to key in on Landmark, but if you look at their, they're just trying to figure it out. You know, they brought in six different shows. The first six shows were completely different types of music, genres, and they had six different results.
Different numbers,
And it's a challenge, and it's a feeling out process. And I think that a lot of the promoters that got into the game back in the day would talk about, you know, guarantees or soft guarantees, and there were different terms, and also a lot of it's really hard to make it work.
Yeah.
I know Gary Witt's really involved with that national independent
at the Pabst Theater
venue.
Group.
National Independent Venue Association, and they had a report a couple years ago, 64% of independent venues lost money.
Yeah.
You know, and that's eye-opening and also very jarring and scary. But I think here we're smart, we're nimble.
Do you feel like there's a saturation point coming? I remember maybe 15, 20 years ago talking to a lot of independent restaurant owners and getting their feelings. Like, they thought, wow, for our size of population in greater Milwaukee, we had maybe too many restaurants. It ebbs and flows. It all works out in the end. But what are we getting right in terms of being a music city?
I think the balance is amazing here. I mean, we have independent venues, and now with having a Live Nation stage, we have wonderful theater sound quality. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been to concerts in other cities, and like something at the Riverside, just the actual sound is great.
Yeah.
You know, I know the load-in isn't easy, but, you know, and then also Fiserv hosts a lot of really good shows. And that's a nice big venue that you can do year round. And then our Summerfest grounds, I just keep waiting for them to do some year round stage down there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like a waiting game.
Yeah. I'm sure it's coming and being studied for sure. But your point on sound, before we go to break, and we'll talk about the Gobbler when we come back. But I always truly appreciate venues like the Pabst Theater and being able to sit upstairs in the corner as a reviewer taking in a show, and the sound is absolutely perfect. So, like, having that appreciation for how much time, energy, effort, and like the historic nature of the venues goes into making the sound great is, you know, we're truly blessed to have that variety in the area.
The Pabst is ridiculous. I mean, I saw Stone Temple Pilots. Oh my God. He did a solo show there, and it was an acoustic guitar, and it filled the whole venue.
Yeah.
So
very good. We're talking with Ted Lukash from the Era Group. Ted, when we come back, wonderfully weird Wisconsin comeback story with the Gobbler. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. The Gobbler is back in Johnson Creek. A pretty weird, wonderful Wisconsin comeback story. Ted, as a music reviewer, as a numbers guy, what does a comeback of the Gobbler say to you in terms of the state of live music right now? And you were there for opening night last Saturday. Who was on stage? And paint us a picture of what the Gobbler looks like today.
Well, I got to admit, I hadn't seen a show there in their last incarnation. So this was my first time out there.
You've driven past, though. Everyone's driven past Johnson Creek and seen it.
But it was a very interesting venue. Obviously, it's circle. So it's got a kind of a different feel. You've got stands off on the side of, you know, probably I would say maybe 100, 150 on each side. It's a 450-person venue.
Okay, so it's pretty intimate.
Yeah, it's intimate, but the sound was amazingly good. I thought they'd have a lot of challenges. They did not. It was Terry Clark, so it was a country musician. And she went five wide on stage, and they all sounded great. The mix was good. It's just a interesting story because it wouldn't have been one I would have bet on. You know, if you were looking, I mean, the Bend Theater in West Bend, you can kind of see that community coming around, old theater. You got kind of the sets already there, the staging's there. But this was a building that had been basically mothballed for a number of years, and the investors put in some money and brought it back to life.
It has kind of an interesting, funny name, a good backstory. The location is between Milwaukee and Madison, so maybe that played into it. But sometimes nostalgia for nostalgia's sake doesn't always work from a business standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, my wife was with me, and she laughed at the chairs. They had the 60s style bouffant, or whatever you call those, the soft leather chairs. And then I got to thank the staff there was very generous. They took us on a tour to their lower. They have kind of like a speakeasy part that they haven't fully developed.
Interesting. Okay.
Has a stage. And probably fit a couple hundred people down there, I'm thinking. There's a bar in the back, of course, and it's right next to the green room. And they apparently, Willie Nelson had played on that little stage just coming through town one night many years ago. But it's just, I can see how they could develop that. That would be just another little mini source of revenue for them.
Yeah. I mean, from a business model standpoint, that feels really smart, you know, to use that use space and maximize it from like a VIP standpoint. And I think that's what venues like this are going to have to do. I mean, you're seeing it on the macro level at American Family Field, optimizing the seats behind the home plate. Yeah. You got to continue to find those incremental ways to drive revenue.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a neat story to follow, and you want to see where they're going to go. But I, you know, wish them the best, and hopefully they can find their way. Gobble, gobble.
That's right. I always like to be a rising tide lifts all boats, so it's good to have another venue in the area. All right, we're going to shift a little bit here, Ted. Your time in your career spent a ton with telecom and wireless. You spent some real insider time. You know all the ins and outs. For the average person who's looking at their bill each and every day on mobile phones, what are we overpaying for? What's the simplest way to maximize and to lower our cell phone bills? And what if, I'm asking you a lot of questions, but tell me about the everyday bill. And then if, as we all are, we're getting all these deals to switch to another carrier, what do we have to be mindful of?
Well, you and I had this conversation, and I hope I gave you some good advice.
You did.
But the big key is if you are not paying a subsidy on the phone. So what that means is when you see, hey, get a free phone over 3 years, it's really a payback. It's you're trading in a phone and you're getting, you know, let's say $30 for easeability sake, and then you're getting $30 back. But if you leave early, you got to pay that off. So if you have phones that are paid off, that is your time to shop. That's where you're really going to – I mean, you can see there's some plans as low as $15 a month. With some carriers, there's I don't want to get into specifics because I'm not advertising for anybody. But, if you could do the basic research, as low as $15, even with major carriers, the big three, you can still get prepaid deals where bringing your own equipment for in the 20s. So that just makes the most sense, and that's the most savings. So
separating the device from the plan is key. And I think a lot of people don't realize, to your point, Ted, when you purchase the phone through the provider, people are like, ooh, it's only $15 a month. It's only $30 a month. You're still paying that full cost of the phone throughout 36 months.
Yeah. So the biggest challenge I have with working with corporations and other organizations is trying to get their timeline right. So what inevitably happens is the CEO or the CEO's family, somebody in their family, their equipment breaks, and then they go in midterm and they sign a new term. So then you think you have all the salespeople and all the, you know, the operations people lined up on a contract or on a term line anyways that you can end in a year, and then you find out there's a bunch of fees to get out of it. So the carriers are getting more aggressive and getting a little sneakier with doing some buyouts. Play around with that. That's not a bad play either.
If you are going to change providers, what's the one thing that you have to do before transferring? That's on us as the consumer.
You absolutely need to unlock your device.
Okay.
So if you,
now, is that up to me?
Yes.
Or is that up to company XYZ?
So my former employer, AT&T, right before I departed, has a policy now where they do unlock equipment once it's out of term,
okay,
at least on Apple. Hmm. So they were doing that, but not all carriers do that. And the problem is when you go to switch, you are now not a client. So now try to get the phone unlocked after the fact is it's a catch-22. So you almost have to – I've had it in the past where we brought clients back onto the carrier, had them unlock the device, and then bring it back over. So and it just creates a whole lot more work. So just take a few minutes, unlock the device.
Note to self, if you're buying a demo phone from an authorized retailer, make sure you have it all written down. You have a receipt in hand because it's going to make life a whole lot easier when you need to unlock that device.
Very, very true.
When we come back, why an Italian movie made in 1948 still matters today. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back. We're joined in studio by Ted Lukash, managing partner at The Era Group. Is it okay if I talk about your home theater?
Oh, yes.
And we spent some time recently watching a really interesting movie called The Bicycle Thieves. I was honored that you invited me and a handful of people over for kind of a guy's movie night. But I wanted to get your thoughts on this 1948 Italian film that we watched together, because there were some really interesting insights into poverty and pride and dignity, kind of what everyone's looking for in terms of work and opportunity. Tell us about Bicycle Thieves.
Well, it's a neorealist film, and it really defines the entire genre, for me anyways. I'm wearing my film major hat.
Yeah, okay. You can wear that hat. You own it.
So, but yeah, it's one of those films you need to experience because they're all not actors. It's shot in a very live manner. So it's kind of full circle to what you're seeing now with a lot of the TV, with the reality TV, except that stuff's all edited. You know, heavily edited to create a narrative. This just is one of those views where you're watching it and it just keeps you captivated because you can feel the pain and the real heartache in the film. It's about family. It's about hope. A lot of things that kind of resonate right now in what's going on, you know, any type of uncertainty. So, but
it was captivating in so many ways from cinematography standpoint, but the leadership, the ethics, and just how systems treat people who are on the edge, like all of that was in this film. And it really, like, it's one of those films that sits with you for a long time.
Yeah.
So put that on your list. Is it easy to find on a streaming service? I don't know if it will be.
Yeah. It's actually on, I believe it's on Cinemax. And then it's also, I'm honking for the library today.
All right.
I'm on the trustees of the Frank L. Weinberg Library Board. So, if you get the box version,
okay,
it's got a little hidden nugget in there. There's a second disc that has some really interesting outtakes, and then there's a book that comes with it.
Nice.
So check your library and get your DVD if you still have one.
That's a good suggestion for anything. Go to your local library, check out a book, a DVD, or whatever you need for your cultural pursuits. All right, Ted, a couple quick closes here. What's a small experiment that a greater Milwaukee business owner could run in the next 30 days to find money, to find cost savings that they didn't know they had?
Well, a really, really easy one is waste. A lot of times people don't realize where they're at. They'll think, oh, well, I got two cans and, or two dumpsters in back or whatnot, and we're good, you know.
Yeah.
But it's really that's one that's a pretty easy one because they don't look at it and it just kind of gets renewed.
Yeah, a lot of legacy expenses that you just don't analyze enough. What's a question that you wish more CEOs in the area would ask you?
I wish they'd ask me how to help. You know, a lot of them, you know, it's not nice, but a lot of them, you know, think they know everything. And I was one of those 10 years ago. And if I knew what I knew now back then, I would ask more questions.
Yeah.
So a lot of times they don't want to ask for help, and it's a time thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Finally, it's graduation season, not only on the higher education level, but eighth graders, high school, kids are moving on, moving out. If anyone's listening who's going to become an empty nester, what's your advice for families and for business leaders? Because it's a big adjustment. I was sitting with a friend the other day, and she was telling me about just how, wow, her kids are on the coasts, just what the cadence of communication is and how, like, the level of outreach and feeling like, wow, I'm not as needed. Like, how does that factor into a family, dad, and business life?
I think it depends on what you have on the side. I have a lot of passions and way too many. So I'll pursue a lot of different angles on ways to spend time. But it really has to come down to what your comfort level is. I know a lot of people that, you know, are empty nesters that I'm affiliated with are finding hobbies and rekindling connections that they haven't had in a long time.
Yeah.
Whether that be, you know, arts or film in our case, or, you know, music, whatnot. So it's just a good opportunity to kind of reopen up yourself because you've been kind of maybe closed off for time-wise.
I think I'm not there yet, but it seems to be a good opportunity to pause and reflect and really ground yourself in what you want to do next. And oftentimes, no matter where we are in life, we don't take that time. And now, if you have it, I say take that time. Ted Lukash from the Era Group. Ted, always appreciate your time. We'll do it again soon.